Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I'm your host, Scott, and you can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. And you can find all of our stuff at ReviewAndRoast.com or ComicRoast.com. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/ReviewAndRoast. And you can find us on Instagram at ReviewAndRoast or at our newest one, which is Star Wars Tabletop. Recently, we've gotten into X-Wings, and, you know, Mike kind of likes painting the ships, and plus we've got Armada and all other games. But anywho, this is actually going to be a special comic roast this week, as Brian, myself, and Michael have went to the Blue Box Cafe once again for a live podcasting event, and we went up for three separate occasions to talk about just our comic podcast in general, on, you know, how we got started into it and all that good stuff. And then we talked about tabletop gaming another time, and we went up a third time to talk about comic books. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of splice those together, and they're about 30 minutes apiece, and so I won't ramble on here, but we're going to go with the podcast one, we're going to go with the tabletop one, we're going to go with the comic book one. We hope you enjoyed it, and if you were ever in the Illinois/Elgin area, I highly recommend the Blue Box Cafe, and if you're a Doctor Who fan, you'll particularly like it. But without any further ado, here is our clips from what they called Madeline Kahn 2017.
Welcome to Madeline Kahn. I didn't say welcome Madeline Kahn. Welcome to Madeline Kahn 2017.
Thank you.
So we are now going to interview Brian and Scott.
Correct.
Correct.
They are brothers.
Yay.
Which one is Danny DeVito in this group?
Probably me.
You?
Yeah, might as well be.
All right. So that makes you Schwarzenegger?
Oh, God. I guess that does.
Yeah, why not? Also me.
Can you hear me now?
I'm kidding. They do the podcast, nice. The Comic Roast. But you have others, don't you?
Very much so.
Yeah, let's hear. Lay them out there. I want to interview you guys about your story, what you do, what your shows are. Let's start with your shows. What are the shows you guys do?
Can I interject first?
Yes.
Back to the cons you guys were just talking about. You owe it to yourself to start going to some panels. I started going for the first time last year, and it is by far one of the best things about the con.
I completely agree with you.
Just saying.
I completely agree with you. My personal problem is I'm either doing the panels or I'm in Artist Alley making the connections I need to make stuff happen.
I agree. But
so
I mean,
every once in a while I'm like, oh, I'll go to a panel.
Yeah.
Blair had a panel. We're going to talk about hers. I went to that, and I couldn't get in, but I tried. And it was awesome, the little bit I saw.
Okay.
I do try. They're just hard for me to get to. But
it's not
I promote them like crazy.
For more than one day, but sometimes that
doesn't
work out.
That's the other thing. The big cons, I'm only doing one day right now. Yeah. I've kind of had enough. The small cons, like we went to Starbase Indie, which was a Star Trek one. We were there two full days. And it was really small, and I was like, but we were invited. We had our own game room and stuff. And I was like, okay, well, we'll do this. You know what? Had a great time. And the best part was you start to learn when you're there that much, you kind of learn the ebb and flow with like the celebrities. So I knew when it was busy and when it wasn't. I went in and talked to the celebrities. I mean, I would have a half hour talking to a celebrity. And they were awesome. The guy that played plays Grumpy on Once Upon a Time. I talked with him forever.
Nice.
What a great guy. I can't remember anybody's names.
I'm kind of terrible with that too.
It'll hit me at some point. So, yeah. But the little like the local cons, like I love the library cons, things like that.
That one's coming up.
There's always library cons. We just did Schaumburg. Barrington just had one. Yeah, we do all of these. So,
okay.
But enough about the cons.
Yeah.
Scott's like, let's promote the cons. Yeah. So, let's hear. What shows do you guys have?
Currently, we do the Comic Roast. That is Scott, myself, Chris, who's supposedly going to be here later, and our friend Damien from Seattle, Washington. He Skypes in every week. We also do a weekly, mostly it's kind of turned into a tabletop game podcast. It's kind of like one of our main areas of interest at this point. The show started out, we were doing the Rebirth. We were trying to stay on top of the whole Rebirth initiative. Okay. Failed miserably because it's just way too much to cover.
No, wait, that was on Comic Roast?
No, we started a second pod. Well, we've had other podcasts.
But if it's table, that's what I'm not understanding. It's tabletop, but you were starting with Rebirth, the DC Rebirth stuff.
Kind of. Well, it was a different lineup, and it was more for the Review and Roast website.
Okay.
So we started another one that we ended up calling You May or May Not Like It. Because
okay.
That's what the Mike, who will also be here later, he always says that. So we're like, well, there's the name of the show.
Perfect.
And it started because he started buying all the Rebirth books. But like we said, when you're putting out 2, 3, 4 books a week, we're trying to keep on top of everything.
Yeah.
It just got out of control. So then we just started doing, like, you know, movies. And now we try to do at least one weekly board game one under the You or You May Not Like It.
Okay.
And then we've got the Movie Roast, which, like you said, with your con one. It comes when it comes, and it is what it is. You know
right.
what I mean? It's been a long time, but we used to try and do that every week. But, again, staying on top of all this stuff is
sure.
kind of a mess.
I get it. Trust me.
And then finally, we kind of we try to interview people as much as possible, but it hasn't happened a lot lately. But we do that under like Review and Roast Presents kind of thing.
Sure.
And usually it's local comic guys. Like we have had Dan Doherty, who does the Beardo comic. He's right in Orland, which is by us, so it's nice and simple. But
he's
we've
an
also
easy one, yeah.
We've done Bob Fingerman was
Bob
our
Fingerman.
First, you know, big name, I guess you could say. And then Keith Powell
from 30 Rock.
30 Rock. We had him on. And then we haven't really had any interviews lately. But
okay.
We got another one coming up, though.
So. That's why I don't go to the panels, because I'm busy talking to all these people or to reps and making those contacts.
Yeah.
And then I lose the cards, or I make the contact, and I see them a year later, and they say, well, I want to be on your show. When are we going to do this?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, Neil Gaiman. Or, you know, like, yeah. I mean, it's like literally that bad. It's literally that bad. There's one guy, Mike Vec, who did the black. He created the black Spider-Man costume for Secret Wars.
Okay.
He doesn't really do interviews. He doesn't really do this stuff. But I've seen him so many times, and every time I go, I was gonna contact you, and he's like, "You're like the one guy. I'll do it if you just contact me." I am the worst.
You know, at this point, you know, when you're so small, I'm assuming that you know. You don't have a million people working for you.
No.
But you're like us, and you only got 3-4 people, and you keep overextending yourself to try and reach as many people as you can, and it gets to be too much sometimes.
It does.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to... there's a comic writer from Seattle, Miles Greb. He was on once. We've been kind of back and forth, maybe try to get him back on. Matthew Rosenberg, I think he's doing Spider-Man right now, but he's done some stuff for Black Mask. Four Kids Walk Into a Bank is probably his current one. Rumor is he's going to come on in the next month so, but I don't know of anything definitive. And then the guys from Wanted Earth are supposed to come on too.
Yes, that was they were at C2E2 developing a board game called Wanted Earth. It actually hit Kickstarter
Thursday.
Did you get to? Did they have the board game there?
Yes,
I saw them
with all the little miniatures.
Yeah, I didn't get to go up and check it out. Is it good?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. We met up with them. They taught us how to play it. We took the prototype home. We played it a bunch of times. We did reviews. We did a podcast on it.
Sweet.
So we're gonna interview them.
Okay, I'm gonna ask you to do me a favor.
Yes.
Send me a link to it, because Chris and I run a Facebook group that we're gonna talk about today called Geeking Out.
All right.
Which you write for.
I do.
Yes.
But it's basically events and things going around Chicago that are geeky that would be of interest.
Yeah, I'm going to have to cut you off, but these guys are local. They are literally from Orland Park.
Well,
super nice and really, really talented guys. So.
We like to feature Kickstarters. So we'll just put up, you know, Kickstarter we love.
Okay.
And put it on there. So let me know, and we'll put that on there for them.
Yeah, I got to.
They will love it.
Like I said, we play tested it with the developers. They sat with us. They walked us through the game. And, like, it's impressive how much thought they put into it. Because the first time game, a lot of game companies, even, like, the biggest developers, they always start with, like, a small card game and they work their way up.
Sure.
These guys went big right out of the gate.
Wow.
And, I mean, you could just
tell. Are they going to hit their Kickstarter?
Apparently, their Kickstarter is doing really well.
All right.
I mean, it's been up for 3 days. They've already cracked the 10,000 mark, I think.
Wow.
which is super impressive for an unknown game company. I mean, apparently they're doing really well with it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But
send me the link.
Absolutely.
There is definitely like a Kickstarter thing where there are people who literally just sit on Kickstarter and just hit refresh waiting for the next thing to show up. Yeah. And they're like, here, $80.
Yeah,
so
I know.
There's probably a little bit of that.
Guy. I just don't have $80.
There's probably a little bit of that, but it's got a little bit of a, you know, combat aspect mixed with a little bit of maybe Mars Attacks.
Sure.
So I'm sure that probably helps as well. The game's really
well
done.
Send me the link to your review of it, too, and I'll put that on the post. That way people can hear what you guys say about it.
It's actually the review link and the podcast link are on their Kickstarter.
Cool.
As well. But I'll send you everything. Yeah,
send it to me.
Yeah.
Send it to me. So how long have you guys been podcasting?
6 years with like a 2-year break.
Yeah. The first 2 years we were doing a live thing. On what was that? Blog Talk Radio. So we're doing a 2-hour live show every Sunday with 6 people. Which is ridiculous for a live show.
We know.
And after about 5 or 6 months, it kind of blew up on itself. Half the people quit. The rest of us were fighting about it. And we just kind of stopped. And then, the next 2 years, it's like, we should podcast again. We should do this again. So one day I'm like, you know what? Okay. I'm starting the account. Me, him, and at the time was our friend Joe. We're like, we're going to start the Comic Roast. And it's kind of just kind of snowballed from there. We've had people coming in and out.
Sure.
We've added shows, taken shows away. Well, you know how it goes. But this one has been going strong. Now we've just finished our...
We're at like episode 130-something.
Yeah.
Nice. 136, maybe.
And that's just with the main Comic Roast.
Then we've got This Week in Geek, which we're actually putting on hiatus now. But
I like the word hiatus.
We have episode 100 that has been teased for about 2 months. We've done 99, 99.5, 99.99. We did the prequel episode. And it's all leading up to episode 100.
Well, because you want it to be special. So
when we pull 100, we're done
for
a while. We're calling it a hiatus.
Yeah. Oh, I like that because then you can always bring it back, which is beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's how you guys got into it. Were you always like radio nerds, or were you like, we just want to do this, or you're just nerds?
Just nerds. I mean, I'm a radio nerd now. I mean, I never got into the whole ham thing, but once we were like, man, what's this whole podcast thing about? And like, we should totally do one. I'm like, hey, I went to school. I know how to do audio. I could do a better one. Well, because he was doing a show with one of his friends, and I'm not trying to be mean, but I'm like, I could pull off a better production than this.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like, let's do it, because they were using a room mic with like 5 people.
Yeah, it was...
Didn't work that well.
And
so
it was
like,
live, so it didn't sound particularly...
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. Well, one of our guys, when we got him, was doing his show with a GarageBand mic. And it was like this, and it was like 3 people. And you could monkey with it to make it sound okay, but what a difference when you put a mic in front of each person.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and we've put a little money into getting better mics, and we got a better mixer. And
sure.
Upgraded our computer, so it
all makes a
better.
Difference.
Yeah.
You know what made a huge difference for us was editing.
Yeah.
Instead of doing it live, now we record it. I go through it. I edit all the awkwardness
burps,
out.
Burps, farts.
Yeah.
Pauses.
It's great.
See, we do so much live stuff that there's almost no editing.
You know what? When you do it for so long, it
but in the beginning, it would be hours of sitting there editing, tweaking. You know, and when there are certain shows, we still do that with. But a lot of the stuff that I do with my wife, or I do with Chris, or Lil, there's not much editing that has to happen unless somebody's like, wait, you know, something like that, which happens. We all have a fart reel. Let's face it.
Come on, Blair, you have one, right?
Yes.
You just
we all
hit the
have
mute
one
button. That's all.
Yeah. No. Come on. I want that on recording. Someday it's like, you know, you've been doing this for 90 years. You're a success in the industry. What would you like to do? I want to play my fart reel. That's what I'm going to do because it's awesome.
That'd be funny.
Yeah.
That'd be funny. It'd be like the bloopers.
Yes. We'll leave it there. Okay. So that's what got you guys kind of into it.
Yeah.
You're moving along. You're like 130 episodes. Roughly, of the one.
Correct.
Yes.
And the others are
anywhere
in its
from,
wake. It's all over, right?
Exactly.
Have you done the show like live in front of an audience? I know you did it at the marathon.
Just the marathon.
Just the marathon.
Just the marathon. So that's the only time you've done it live in front of people.
Yes.
Not uncommon. Most people have not done their shows live.
We've had offers at our local comic shop when they first moved to their new location. They're like, oh, you guys do a podcast? Would you want to come in and, you know, do some live stuff? And we're like, yeah, that'd be great. But they've never done it.
Yeah.
So we never pushed it. You know what I mean? It's just,
I get it.
It is what it is.
I get it. Yeah, I mean, Chris saw this. We did it live someplace, and he was like, you got to do that at Blue Box. We got to do it. And we had no idea what we were doing. And none of us had an idea what we were doing. And we just jumped in. And I almost killed it during the first episode, remember?
Like, you, I mean, were so good, you almost killed it?
No, no. I mean, we're... Yeah, I mean, we're what, 20 minutes into it? And I go, we're terrible at this. This is the worst. We're not going to do this again. And my wife and Chris are sitting there like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, nope, we're going to move on. They talked me out of that. So it's been 3 years, almost.
You know, actually, so, going all the way back to when we first did the live Blog Talk Radio thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We actually were sitting there like seconds before the thing went live, and we're all like, who's going to start? Who's going to start? And then it went live, and for like 30 seconds, it was dead silence.
Just panic.
And I'm like, do we even have an intro song? What are we doing here? And I just stood there, and I looked at the mic. I'm like, hello, we are going to do a podcast again. And then luckily, we recovered, but for like the first 5 minutes, everybody's like, you know,
yeah, not knowing,
they're swearing
who's
under their breath
run
at one another, like, will you start already? That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to tell you the name of that show, but if you can find the last episode where at the end, everyone's kind of bickering amongst themselves, and I was like, if no one's going to say anything, I'm just going to end it.
And, you know, oh, I want to hear that.
Oh, if you can find, I'm not going to tell you the name of it, but if you can go through our stuff and find it, you might want to.
Ooh, it's like a Where's Waldo for like angry podcasting.
It's like you can hear the moment that I'm about to blow my top, and
oh,
then I ended the show like an hour early, and I just dorked out on everybody, and I'm like, get out of my house.
I'm tempted to make a clamor out of that, like a little 20-second piece we can share with everybody. Yeah. That's awesome.
Sometimes it just has to happen.
Yeah, it's funny now. At the time, I was just like, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you know what? That's not uncommon, too, especially for first endeavors where you're putting all this passion in and everything, and then you realize this is not working. Or, I mean, it happened to us when we were both podcasting for others, and we realized this isn't how we want to do it, and this is not working for us. And it's happened in reverse, where the people are doing it for us, and they've said, I want to do it this way, and this isn't working. And, you know, it's part of the creative process,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, plus, like, when we started, we were just randomly running through a myriad of topics that had no relation to one another.
Sure.
And then you're trying to appease five different people who want to say different things, and some people want to talk more about this and less about that, and then the more you go on with this, they're waiting for their turn, and it's just, like, it was way too difficult to manage it.
So I know you guys talk a lot about comics. Comics, games, movies not as much now, but right. Comics, games, movies. That's really your focus, is those three areas, correct? Is it just tabletop, or do you video game also?
We've done a video game or two, but honestly, since I've gotten really heavily into the tabletop gaming, my video gaming has dropped dramatically.
Interesting.
It's also hard to talk about video games when we all kind of play different types of games. You know, like, so this guy might play a game I think is stupid, and then he's playing a game I play Overwatch all the time with Mike, who will be here later, but like everyone else hates that game. Even I hate that game half the time, but like,
and
you know, it's
honestly, you know,
I have a funny Overwatch story.
I'd love to hear it.
It involves him.
Oh, I know. I really want to hear
it. So I was over at their house, and his brother Edward used to be on This Week in Geek, and he's younger, and Edward was playing Overwatch. And William goes, that's a baby game, okay? And Edward's like, what? That's not, what are you talking about? He goes, baby game, stupid. And he's playing his game. And Edward goes, it's not a baby game. And he looks at me, he's like, it's not a baby game. Look, and yeah, I'm seeing people shooting and stuff. It's kind of cartoony, but it's not. And William just is like, nope, baby. And Edward goes, this is what he said. William goes, who do you play with? And he goes, oh, come on. It's everything. It's like, I play with, there's like 5-year-olds up to like 90s. He's like, 5-year-olds. That's a baby game. It was the greatest moment. As he's saying, it's like, I don't play, oh, I play with 5-year-olds. Oops. Yeah. I loved it. I loved it.
Here's the 90-year-old he's playing with then.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Although I do scream like a child when I play.
The 90-year-old is sitting next to me. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Either that or it's the Jasper from The Family Guy.
Yes.
Let's all play some Overwatch. Mm.
I need a bath now.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
But yeah, the thing with video games for me is, like, the last game I really got into was Uncharted 4.
Yeah.
And probably about two-thirds of the way through the game, I was like, I feel a lot less like I'm playing a game, more I feel like I'm curating a movie that's really long and really repetitive.
That really feels that way.
And that's how modern games feel to me. I feel like I'm just getting to the next 40-minute cutscene, and I'm like, oh. I mean, the game looks incredible, but I don't feel like I'm doing a whole lot.
See, I'm playing Skyrim right now, and I can't stop. See? And I love it.
I am part of the group that hated that game. I don't know what it was. I just...
You're the hater in the group?
For that game, yeah, but like Elder Scrolls Online, for the time that I played, it was super fun, but it got really old really fast. But back to his whole feels like a movie, when I was playing Final Fantasy 15, first half of that game is great, but then you hit a certain point where it pushes you to the end.
Yeah, right.
Like there's, it's like, dude, what happened? Like now I can't go back and do any of this stuff.
Yeah, I kind of lose interest at that point in some games too. Yeah. So
not to mention.
I was going to say we're going to talk tabletop gaming later, so I don't want to feel like we're ditching over that. We're going to have you guys back on for that later. Yeah. But go ahead. What were you saying, Brian?
I was going to say with Uncharted, there was two things that came to mind too when I finally did finish the game. Was A, the end of the game is like a movie in itself. Like I felt like I could have left, gone grocery shopping, grabbed food, came back, and it still would have been going.
It's a huge cutscene, right?
It's a huge cutscene followed by like the longest credits probably outside of Guardians of the Galaxy. But also, when I started like thinking about it logically towards the end of the game, I'm like, this is a T-rated game, which is, you know, you can effectively let a 12-year-old play it. I've murdered like 600 people.
Yeah.
With machine guns, and how am I not being chased by law enforcement? Because they're all like, their whole shtick is like they're pushing for realism, and I'm like, there's no way anybody
would
get away with this.
There's no way. I know.
This is insanity. Like, I've killed a mansion full of human beings. I mean, granted, they're all bad guys, but like, that's still...
Well, that goes back to what you and I were kind of chatting online about with like comic books. I've kind of gotten away, even though I do a podcast about Marvel, and I watch all this stuff, and I read this stuff... I'm less interested because that nags at me. You know, I watch Batman Superman. How many freaking people did those heroes kill? And there's no repercussions. There's nothing. And I get it. You're not going to have a movie about, oh, they're getting booked. You know, that's boring city, except for in Daredevil, which was awesome when they did that. But I mean, come on. But now Batman is just like freely killing and has no remorse, just like moves on to the next thing. And I'm like, yeah, you're after the bad guy, but you are killing so many people to do it.
Right.
It's making it harder for me to stay in there, you know?
And yeah, I do like the movie, but it did feel like a lot less of a detective story and more about, you know, big explosions and machine guns and... You know,
well, let's face it, part of his reason for going after Superman in the first place was Superman's lack of respect for everybody he killed in the first movie.
Which he showed a lot of
himself.
I mean, not at all.
Right.
But I bet he does in Justice League, because that seems like the Steel Magnolias of superhero films.
Well, I mean, since we're talking about the Batman versus Superman.
Not even a laugh at that. That was a good one.
No, it wasn't.
Dang.
Snap.
Yeah. Well, my parents can't hear, so they just kind of nod and laugh.
My only real issue with Batman vs. Superman was they're fighting, they're duking it out, everything's, they're about ready to kill each other, and then it's like, why did you say Martha?
Yeah.
Like, okay, do that line on every show. Your mother shares the same name, and that's why you guys are friends now. Come on.
I'm actually surprised that you said it first today.
I'm going to go ahead and say maybe. I don't remember if I did or not.
Well, yeah, because right after he goes, oh, that's why you say Martha. See, that's how it's explained.
I'm going to go home. I'll be back after I watch it. Yeah.
So
that and Diane Lane was on
Andy Cohen, just on something this week?
I think a couple nights ago, and somebody wrote in on Twitter and asked if Justice League was better than Avengers, and she's like, oh, no, not at all.
No.
And I was just like, all right, I guess that's going to be
done
to not get super pumped about. Later this year.
I'm super pumped about it. I don't know.
I'm still going to watch it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to see it.
Watch everything.
And here's the best part is everyone that says that those movies are the worst, I've only seen it 30 times. Like, well, yeah. How much did you really hate it?
I kind of do. I made it once in the theater, and then I tried it at home, and I was so angry while I was watching it. And I started out going like, you know what? I'm at home. I could watch this thing. I have so many thoughts on it. It's ridiculous. And bad enough that I saw the director's cut and was like, I should pick this up and watch it. And I'm still so mad. I was like, eh, another time. So it's going to get three viewings out of me, and that'll be it.
It's not bad for a movie you didn't
I've watched Chud like 40 times.
This kid we grew up with was obsessed with Chud.
Chud is awesome.
Chud's a pretty good movie.
I'm not knocking it. I'm just
and
saying.
It's got Daniel Stern in it. You can't hate Chud.
Yeah, exactly. It, yeah, right. It's got cannibalistic, humanoid, underground Daniel Sterns.
Yeah. Ooh.
Nothing nice. Better. That's Chud's. Right.
You tie it to Home Alone, which ties it to The Breakfast Club and ties it to Chicago, and that's right. why you have
you,
to
you
have
do
Chud
that too,
in your collection.
Because I always look at them and try to make it a sequel or something, you know, or a prequel. So I watched Chud, and it is a prequel to Home Alone.
Or if you just put Anthony Michael Hall and Judd Nelson walking in the background and it just all comes together.
Yes,
it could
absolutely.
Be the Chud cinematic universe with John Hughes.
That's exactly what I do. I just did one recently. I can't remember what it was, though, so this is going to go nowhere. But there was one recently when I said, if you view this as the prequel, it makes it so much interesting. And like the person I was talking to, like their head exploded. Like, oh, my God. You make it all the same universe. Yes, everything is the same universe.
Everything is all in one universe.
And anything that, what's his name, from Quantum Leap, Scott Bakula's in. Anything he's in, he is going to leap at any moment.
That would be amazing.
In every show.
I used to love Quantum Leap.
Yes, if you imagine he's going to leap, it makes that movie infinitely better.
So that means I should go watch CSI New Orleans or whatever right now?
And expect him to leap.
I don't know if I have it in.
You know what would be really great? You know how you get around that? If you're like, get the sound effect on your phone and just randomly hit the sound. So you're like, ooh, ooh, he leaped. That would be awesome.
From when he was on Star Trek?
Yes.
That's where he leapt?
Yes. He leapt from Star Trek.
Oh.
Or you could just...
Oh.
Or you just do it right at the commercial break so he actually leaps right into a you know, Viagra commercial.
And then watch Married to the Mob and imagine that Ziggy leaped into that. That's a movie right there. Is it Ziggy? Is it Ziggy, the one who he was with him? Al. It's
I feel
Al.
Like you should,
yeah,
I feel like you
Al.
Should cut all these movies together with that sound effect.
Always. Everything should have that. I was actually writing a script that was going to be like, I was trying to make like a little anthology, and I literally wrote in like three episodes that its character just changes. You hear the sound and they just change. I didn't explain it. Nothing happened. It just, and then it's a new actor playing the character.
Oh boy.
All right. You guys are done. You're going to be back because we're going to talk tabletop and we're going to talk comic books. Okay?
Yes.
All right. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, before you go. This is for you guys and for this cast of thousands. Give your social media. Where can people hear your stuff? Because your shows are really good. I want people to follow you and hear you and all that.
Well, you can find all of our shows at comicroast.com. You can find our written stuff at reviewandroast.com. You can follow me on Twitter at xorsonx, him at Pure Rock Fury. We're also at The Comic Roast, at Review and Roast. Hashtag either one of those. You'll find us Instagram. We also have a new Instagram. We started for called Star Wars Tabletop.
Oh,
okay.
Because
we got into X-Wing recently, and Mike, who will be here hopefully any minute now, he started painting his ships and posting them online, along with, plus we also have Armada and Imperial Assault and et cetera, et cetera.
I have guys I have to cross you guys over with because they play all these, and we'll get you guys guesting on each other's shows.
I'm in.
Yeah, sweet. Well, so, I know you're in because I keep getting your reviews, which are awesome.
Thank you.
You're costing me money. I'm just going to tell you that right
you money.
Now. Whoops. Yeah, it's awesome. I got that two-player game you said was like, dude, get this.
Which one?
Two Cities or
Lost Cities?
Lost Cities.
Have you played it yet?
I haven't played it yet.
Oh,
and I got
God.
Seven Wonders, too, because you were like, if you get this, I will come over and play it.
It's two of the best games.
Seven Wonders, the base game alone, top five of all time.
Okay, don't spoil. Yeah. You're going to talk about that later.
Yeah.
All right, thanks
a
lot, you guys.
Of
you
course.
Were awesome. Let's hear it for them.
Thank you. See you in a few.
See you in a few, yes. They'll be back.
All right, so that was just a little bit about our podcasts and what we do. And I just want to bring it up. I'm not sure if I mentioned it in the beginning, but this was all put on and interviewed by Rob Southgate from Southgate Media. So they have tons of podcasts on their network. We've been talking with them and kind of working with them for a very long time, but you know, we haven't gone out there too much because it is kind of a far drive, but when we do go, it is a blast. So make sure you check out Southgate Media and everything that they do. So anywho, that was our podcast, I guess, story, you could say. And this one is going to be about tabletop. So enjoy.
So welcome to Madeline Con. We are having a microcon here at the Blue Box. And rather than making you... Well, you can buy stuff if people have stuff to sell, but it's really about the interviews and like talking to people or subjects that would be in panels or at Comic-Cons. And Scott and Brian are from the Comic Roast podcast, among others. We already did one interview about that.
Yay!
And but now we're gonna go down into something else.
True.
Is Mike gonna come up here for this part?
He's chicken.
Oh, chicken. Yeah, we'll be pointing at him and laughing later. Maybe
he'll yell.
Are we going to do board games or are we going to do comics right now?
We could do either one.
Which one is Mike most likely to get up on?
Board games.
Are you better than these guys?
But he won't come
up. Yeah. All right. Well, which ones do you guys want to cover? Well, actually, Chris wanted to cover board games with us. Chris, are you able to do board games or do you want to wait?
What?
Do you want to do board games with us right now or do you want to wait on board games?
Yep. As he leaves the room. We're doing it.
Do you want to talk board games?
I mean...
Come on up for a round table.
We
might have to pass
it.
Mics.
Check.
Look at that.
Hell.
Mark's going to join us too. Sorry, Mike, you're out.
Everybody but Mike.
Everybody but Mike. Hey, my mom's coming up too. No, I'm kidding. No, you got to be up here
there's
too.
There's never
you're going to know more about this than I am, for sure.
Part of them.
So let's talk.
Go
through the middle. We're going to talk board games, tabletop gaming a little bit. Conversation, this is a round table, so we can go anywhere with this, right?
Backwards, forwards, upwards,
yes,
downwards.
Yes, all over the place. But I'm going to roll, and whoever gets the lowest number has to leave the table. Now, what we're going to... I got to roll twice.
That'll be me.
We already know the rules are made up.
Yeah, then I'm making them up, and I'm going to forget them, too. So we know that's going to happen. It's kind of weird. You're kind of like the... did you guys ever see Insidious?
Nope.
I'm familiar with its existence.
You know the demon that's behind that kind of looks over the shoulder? That's what Mark looks like for me right now. Like, he's right behind you.
Don't look now.
Don't look. So...
You know what? I'm not uncomfortable with that.
Okay, good. So tabletop gaming is something that I totally dig, but we don't have a lot of experience with it. I played a game for almost a year with Chris. We played Hideouts and Hoodlums,
yes,
which was a role-playing game. And we made it about a year, right? And then it kind of fell apart.
Yeah, 9-10 months. You know, how groups go in RPGs, especially with
schedules
and stuff.
Yeah, but it was awesome. And I hadn't played since high school. But now with my daughter, we're getting into all these other tabletop games. At literally, like, the floodgates opened in the last month. Although we can't seem to get past Sushi Go because that game is so fun.
Here's the good thing about Sushi Go. It's a really good intro to Seven Wonders, at least as far as the card drafting goes.
So that brings...
Is this 7 degrees of Seven Wonders?
Yes.
I'm just wondering, no.
It is.
We can talk about Seven Wonders for the next hour if you want. I'm totally
Actually, we should, because that's one of Mike's favorites, and if he can't come up and talk,
we
should just talk about nothing
How mean. And it wasn't me this time.
Not yet.
So, all right. Then I want to framework it this way. You guys all play tabletop games, and I'm going to actually hand my mic to you, Mark, okay? I might interject once in a while, but I really want to hear you guys talk about tabletop. I want to hear what are the entry points, what are the essential games, and what are some favorites? And if you say D&D, that's perfectly legit because D&D is a blast. Now, I don't know the differences in the D&D games. Chris always is like, well, that's 5. 5's really good. Pathfinder is what I played. And I did this. And he always knows all that stuff.
What are you saying?
Yes. I'm saying that was an impression, and that's what you that's what you sound like.
Thank
you. And this is what I sound like. That's
so I sound like Chip.
That's my family's impression of me. Do you guys get impressions of you done by, like, your families or anything?
Probably behind my back.
Yeah, behind the back all the time. I do him all the time. I do everyone that's around the table.
So do I. So do I. But mine all sound like me, even though I think that I'm doing them. But my family always imitates me with, either that or I think I sound dopey and drunk.
They'd stop if you just ground them.
Oh, I don't do that. I'm too sweet.
I don't blame you.
So I'm going to pass this to Mark. I laid the question out there. Let's hear it.
Well, you mentioned Sushi Go. That's a perfectly good entry point for someone who's never played modern card and board games, because even though it is really simple and it is geared towards kids, it's widely available. You can get it at Target, Toys R Us, Walgreens,
it's pretty much
anywhere.
It's geared towards kids, but my wife and I are playing it like crazy.
I bought it to play with my 7-year-old nephew, and I find myself kind of, I'll be
like
driving
wanting
home from,
to play it, right?
I'll drive home from work. I'm like, you know, I kind of want to play
it's
Sushi
like
Go later.
It's stupid exploding kittens, too. I love that game.
You know what's weird? I don't know if you've ever seen the YouTube channel Board Game Brawl. Yeah. That guy hates that game with a passion. And I remember...
It's got the furry potato card. How can you hate that?
He spent 20 minutes berating everybody involved, which actually is actually one of my favorite videos because the video is just hilarious. But I actually thought it's a good 5-minute filler. I mean, it's not a great game, but it's not a terrible game by any means. I've played worse. Played games that are much worse that last way longer. So I think just the time of the game itself makes it at least playable and kind of funny. So, I mean, just to, you know...
It's one of those games that fill the spot when you're waiting for someone else to show up. You're not going to play it all night long, but it's perfect.
Sure. For, it's a filler. It's a time filler. It's
Exactly. You know, for a long time for us, there's a dice game called Age of War. So you just, you know, you just it's matching the cards, and whoever pulls the most cards win. It's super simple. Again, great filler game because it takes 5 minutes to play. But the best part is you can steal the cards from the other players. So, you know, there's a lot of fighting that goes on as well.
Yeah, it's like a kind of a push-your-luck area control game where there's 5 sets of cards. Like, there's the yellow cards, the purple, and, like, some of them are worth more points and they're more difficult to complete. You start with 7 dice. You roll 7. You allocate those dice based upon the symbols on the cards. Then you start with, depending on how many you allocate to whatever card you're going for, because you can only try to claim one at a time. You take the remainder, you roll those. If you miss or you don't get what you're looking for, you take one away, you roll until you're down to 1. If you can't get it, play passes to the next guy. If the region has multiple cards and you have 3, somebody can try chipping away it. If you have 1 and that person is looking for that 1, they can try and steal it from you. They close all 4, they get the thing, they get all the points. Really a little bit of a cutthroat game, but it only lasts 15 minutes. It comes in a box the size of your phone.
Age of War.
It's by a really famous designer, Rainer Knizia. He's done probably 20% of the best-selling designer games in the last 20 years. Yeah, he's actually a PhD in mathematics, so his games are really numbers-based. Actually, Lost Cities, the game that I told you about, that's a Rainer Knizia game.
Yeah, you brought some games. Is that in there?
Yeah, I figured like when we're like getting ready to like close this particular segment down, I'll start, you know... Yeah, Lost City is actually a board game, but they made a 2-player card game version. This is probably Mike's favorite game ever made. And it's literally about a rule and a half shy of not even being a game, because it's practically just a deck of cards, and it punishes you just for sitting down at the table, which makes it so much fun.
Right. It's like 2-player solitaire. Right.
So this is a smaller version
but
of another,
screw each other
game?
Yeah, there's a board game version of Lost Cities. But then that's the card game version. And this game particularly is explains why Target really doesn't know what they're doing in terms of, even though they do carry a lot of better games than other stores, this kind of explains why they don't know what they're doing. Because they got a bunch of these right before Christmas, and they gave up on it within 3 months. Which is why these popped up on clearance shelves for $5.
Which is why
I literally was just scouring Targets for like 2 weeks going, right. I'll take these, I'll sell these, I'll give these away, I don't care. Everybody should have this game. Yeah.
So how does this do about like distilling like the core concepts of the real, of like the actual game, like into a portable form? Because I love it when that happens in games.
I can't answer that accurately. I've never played the board game. But
okay,
I have played this probably about 20 times now because I've only had it in my orbit now for about a month. But like I said, just the fact, basically the game is there's 5 routes. You're trying to start a route to discover whatever.
Lost City.
Lost Cities.
Ooh. Ooh.
But just to even start a route, just to start a route, automatic minus 20 points. So you're starting with a negative, and for every route, you start with another negative. You have to literally dig your way out. And it sometimes doesn't work out because you have to go in numerical order starting from 2 or 1, 2, 3, however that works out. Somebody might get the 7 that you need. Now you're going to, you know, hopefully maybe you'll get the 8. Maybe you won't. Maybe you get, and then you have to clear 20 points just to not lose points on each lane that you're starting.
Wow.
There have been plenty of games where you start, you get up to 18, you just need that one last card. He gets it, and you're like, then if you had the modifiers on top of that, now instead of minus 2 points, now you're at minus, you know, 8.
Well, here's the real kicker with this game is you play a card first, then you draw.
Right.
So it's so frustrating when you're like you're holding on to a card forever and you're like, I'm just gonna play it, you put it down, and then you pick up the card you needed before that,
right.
And now you can't do nothing with it.
That's actually what we like about Sushi Go so much, because you have to play your card. And you have to keep passing it. And we're going, I'm trying to build something, and I know my daughter's going to use this and start building. It happens. And every time you think you got strategy, like I always think I got my strategy, something crushes
sure.
it. Or I know, like, my wife doesn't like the color on that card. I know I'm going to get those cards every time. And then we play with my daughter, too, and it's like, ah, shoot, she's going to totally nail me because she's got my number. It's great.
Yeah, we like to say that this game is kind of, it almost works like coffee. It just gets the blood going because you get so angry. And the good thing is it's played over 3 rounds. So you're never really out of it. You could be down 75 points and
right.
still come back, which is one of the beautiful things about this game.
Well, it's nice when you can play a game where you have a chance to win all the time, because there's sometimes, you know, and going back to like more traditional games, if you never had any money and don't have any properties, you're never going to win Monopoly. It doesn't matter. You could be rolling dice for the rest of your life, never hit Park Place, and you'd be done. But if you have a chance, and that's what I like about the new Euro gaming, you know, the new modern gaming, not just Euro, is that you do have a chance to win all the time. You can catch a break and come out on top, or at least be in the hunt instead of being, I'm never going to be that, or playing sorry and being at the end. You know,
yeah.
You're done.
Yeah, that's. But I mean, the most important question you have to ask yourself is, why am I playing Monopoly?
Right. Well, I'm just saying, but there's, I mean, there's something.
Because I have the Simpsons one, and it's fun to play the Simpsons one.
No, it's still Monopoly.
You're right, and there's still that, but there's, you know, part of that tabletop gaming was to get families together doing something that all ages could do and enjoy and get there, and obviously we have evolved. You know, I used to play Risk when I was in high school, and we didn't play one board Risk. We played 8 board Risk, where literally it was, I mean, when we talk about year-long games, we would have, like, games that would last weeks. And it would be, you know, there'd be lines between all these boards and stuff. It was out of control, but it was a heck of a lot of fun. But it was also a lot of, you know, people getting mad and throwing boards and doing all that
stuff.
And
that was before you had cell phones to take a picture to make sure no one moved your stuff.
Exactly. No, well, we used to take pictures. I mean, it was the whole thing. We would take Polaroids. It was, everybody was very suspicious of everybody. But that was it. And yeah. Now we have games. I mean, what does a game of Settlers take? A couple hours maybe? At tops? 45? 90?
I was going to say 2 hours is probably the longest.
2 hours would be the longest. Players. It's usually like 45 minutes to an hour and a half. I mean, and that's perfect because you're not, you know, you can play, you have an end result. It's a great game, or Let It Ride. I mean, talking about, you know, even older new games, they're great. And then you get Flux and you get Age of War and you get all these other games. It's 20 minutes, something to do, have a beer, do whatever. You're waiting to watch a movie. All of a sudden, wow, we have this game and we're all interacting and it's cool.
Yeah.
So.
Actually, the best thing about Catan was for the first, like, 2 years, he couldn't win. So it was...
You didn't figure out the strat yet, so.
I was always like, hey,
I'd be like, I got 8 points.
You guys
want to
play Catan?
Martha would play it on Xbox. You know, they have Catan on Xbox, on the Xbox Live. So I had never played it. She'd play it for hours. Then you go to play with her, and she's like a chess master at this thing. Because she's been playing online with people on Xbox, and it is literally... the same setup. Everything's the same. Like, it's the same. And it was, oh man, I can't play with her. I can't win. I cannot win. I need training wheels to play this game. And then I was going to, they wanted me to run a room at that IndianaCon thing. And they're like, you're going to run Catan. I'm like, ah, crap. They're like, no, you're going to run Star Trek Catan. It's different. I have not played Star Trek Catan, but these guys are hardcore gamers. And they're like, it's different, and it's even more awesome. I have no idea. How can it be different other than, like, your queue?
Is that a machine you're getting ship parts? I don't know. I never played it.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's so many different Catan versions. There's actually one called Merchants of Europe, which involves, like, transporting parts down. You have to build your roads, but then you like use a horse and buggy to transport parts to build different kinds of building. It's like the same game essentially.
But more complexities added.
They added a little bit more complexities, and there's like some modifiers that don't exist in the base game. There's other versions that kind of do similar things, and that's kind of how they keep games like this.
Oh sure.
So I would say Catan is going to be one of those base games. I mean, to me, that was one like everybody should have it. Everybody should learn how to play it. What other games do you guys think? Mark, you haven't had much on this one yet. What do you think is a base game?
Well, I'm a particularly big fan of what I like to call backpack games, stuff that you can kind of throw in your bag. The top will fall off, and you have to spend a half hour finding all of the pieces. which is why when you were talking about this Lost Cities game, it kind of got me excited, because one of my favorites that I like to carry around is it's called Mr. Jack, which is based, there's a full board game version of it, but they've also managed to distill this game down. And the basic premise is it's a two-player game. One of the players is Inspector Lestrade. The other is Jack the Ripper. And it's called Mr. Jack. And Mr. Jack has disguised himself as one of nine citizens in London, and your job as Inspector Lestrade is to figure out who Mr. Jack has disguised himself as, and then catch him.
How many players?
Two.
There is a more complicated Jack the Ripper game called Letters from Whitechapel, which he cannot win. And I have won multiple times as the inspectors and as Jack the Ripper.
Is Letters from Whitechapel, is that like love letters?
No, this is a...
Love letters we just got, and that's supposed to be excellent.
I actually don't like it, but I think I'm the only person alive that doesn't.
It's another fun, quick, 5-10 minute game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes they just have their place. But Whitechapel has... I mean, the board lays out Whitechapel, the city, and one person plays as Jack the Ripper going around killing the prostitutes. You don't get a piece on the board. You just have your little, like your dungeon master screen, and you just write down the spots where you're at, and then the other players all take control of investigators that have to try and find you. I suck at it. I get caught every time, and when I'm the investigators, I can't find myself. I mean, I'm terrible at it, but I also now have Dracula, Fury of Dracula, similar type of game.
I want to play that too.
I haven't played it yet, but I'm sure I'll suck. But I'm looking forward to sucking, I guess.
It reminds me, there was a game that I used to work at Galt Toys 100 years ago. And I bought a game there that I still have. It's called Taigo. Have you ever heard of this game? It's a Japanese board game. There are four tigers. So one player is the tigers. Yeah. Four tigers, and the other player gets like 30-some goats. And you put the pieces one at a time. The goats have to surround the tiger, otherwise the tiger can just stomp on goats. So as you're going one at a time, there's a lot of strategy, and how do I get close enough to this tiger before he eats my goat that I can circle him? And the first, I played it with my friend Jack, like endlessly for a few weeks. Every time we'd play it, I mean, literally, like, 3 weeks of play, I could whoever was playing the goat could not win. And we kept going, but there's got to be something. And we kept playing it over and over and over and over. And then we started figuring out how the goat could win. And then it became the best game. It was like, it was crazy. I don't know how anyone ever stayed with it that long. We were just obsessed. We're like, this is the stupidest game because you can't win. And then once we figured it out, it became about 50-50, you could win with the goats.
Right.
It was hard. But it reminds me of that, where I was like, I can't win at this thing. Once you do, it's awesome. I'm going to step away while you guys talk.
All right.
How much of, like, you guys were talking about, and I play the base Catan. I don't play much of the variations. Obviously, that's put out by the company, but how much of that is fan-inspired? I mean, like, a computer game that comes out or something, you know, like a World of Warcraft comes out. All of a sudden, these designers, the 10 or 20 or 30 guys, come up with this idea, and then a million people hack it to make it better. How much of those Catan variations have come from fandom that people have come up and said, hey, this is what we think could happen. Would that be the next evolution of the game? You know what I mean? Like, so like you were talking about the European merchants one. That sounds like somebody at home is thinking, I want to play Catan, but what if we did this? Do you guys know anything about that or not?
Well, I know that the Catan studio was recently bought by Asmodee, which is essentially the biggest non-Hasbro game company on planet Earth. And they had already had all these variations. They have the Rivals card game. They have all the expansions for the base game. They have the Star Trek one. They had Starfarers of Catan. They have the Europe one, the Settlers of America version. My guess is now they're going to pretty much Catan everything they could possibly put their hands on, like they do with Risk or Monopoly.
Sure.
That's about all I know as far as Catan goes.
See, I never bothered to play any of those other versions because I assumed they were just like Monopoly, where Star Trek Monopoly is really just Monopoly books. Sorry.
Sure. And if you're going to buy it, you're going to play it. But, I mean, you know, I think the biggest mistake that inventors of anything think that they're the smartest person in the room. They may be the smartest person to invent that game, but there are literally a million other people saying, we could make this better, we could do this, and that's not bad because it really does take more than one or two or a group of people to make it better. We all have homebrewed versions, and you go to people play these games, you're like, man, that's a really good rule. I wish they would incorporate that. And then, you know, it becomes part of it. So
some designers have done that with Risk.
Uh-huh.
This guy, Rob Davio, came up with the idea of Risk Legacy. He wanted to shorten the playtime and extend the replayability by having, when you finish a game, you write down a bunch of stats or however the game plays out, and then you get an envelope that tells you how to start game two, and then it continues on and on until I think you play through 15 campaigns. So it shortens the game time to about 60 to 90 minutes.
Sure.
But extends the life of the game out, you know, for months.
Sure.
And the legacy thing is kind of a thing.
Right.
I think that's a really interesting phenomena in board games, that like these games that actually have like a progression to them. I think I like that board games are actually adding that element to them.
Well,
now.
And do you guys think that, you know, the big thing about video game is the power gamer. I have to do the min-max, I have to be the best, I have to have the highest hit or whatever, and that applies over to board games. Like I've played Catan and other games with people, they know all the strategies. You start the game and you've already lost. And it's like, I just want to play. I don't want to be played by, you know, be taken by the guy that's played 50 times and knows you start with this resource, you go to this play, you know, and I'm not that I'm a veteran of that. Does that kind of play into the new gaming style as well or not? Or do you guys, I mean, there's some card games you just play and that's what it is, but there's other games that have a specific strategy that works much better than the others, especially the math games.
I really think any time you sit down at a table with somebody who's played a game a lot and you've never really played it, you're going to, like this guy, ended up throwing Splendor across the room because I don't know if I've played it more, but it took him a good 15 times before he finally beat me. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to say I haven't done the same.
Right.
But I mean, you know, when you sit down with anyone who's really familiar with a game, they know a lot of the intricacies and even some of the rules that, you know, you just don't think to mention before you play, you know, and it's like, well, I didn't know I can do that. It's like, well, you didn't ask.
Right.
You know, but I just won, so check. You know, it happens. It happens all the time, but, you know, you just got to stick with it.
Well, do you find that's happened more, especially with I find with the resource-based games, that there's a lot of strategy and a lot of experience. There isn't a strategy playing Risk or Clue or the Risk there is, but like Monopoly, those older games where it's just roll the dice and see what happens, and you happen to get lucky to get, you know, all the green and the yellow properties, and then you win. So
I actually think it's huge with the resource management games because there's some, if I'm sitting down for the first time, I'm going to go, this is the way to go. And it's like, yeah, no.
No.
Everyone else at the table is doing something totally different, and they just demolished my face. And I'm like, well, time to rethink my inks on this one. Sure. That was a terrible move. You know what I mean? It's just resource management is such a great style of game, but if you're sitting down with someone who knows how they're doing, like you might as well just watch.
Sure.
I think in that resource management style of game, the trick is to find a path and stick to it.
Right.
Don't try to do everything. Try to do one thing or one or two things and really maximize your output.
Right.
however you want to word it, and, you know, just leave this side of the board alone, this particular game. Maybe try that the next time around. Maybe then combine this with this. But sure, don't try to do everything, because...
Gear World?
I've been playing... there's this game called Orleans,
right,
which came highly recommended, and I got it, and I love this game. But it's the same thing. You can't cover the map and get all the guys and get all the tiles. Right. You have to kind of pare down what you're going to do and really focus on that.
Right.
And that's what I love about this game, is because this guy might be, like I said, covering the map. Then you go, okay, he's going to do this. I'm going to try and do this. And then you start to see how this strategy kind of dovetails from there.
Sure.
And I feel like if you play a Ticket to Ride, say, you start to see the same mechanics appear in other games. It makes it that much easier to kind, sure, of figure out another game that you're just learning, maybe the first or even second time. Mm-hmm.
So. Well, there is a lot of copycat. I mean, Catan, one of the greatest resource games out there, there's a lot of games that are similar, just like a lot of games like Flux, a lot of games like Munchkin, a lot of games like, you know, all of those games. They do, Ticket to Ride is a very, it's a template game where people will take it. I mean, we all copy from each other. That's what it is. I mean, we put our little stamp on it and say, we're going to have this board game. We're going to run it around the board. Is it going to be Life? Is it going to be Sorry? Is it going to be whatever? But they're all, you know, but they're all different, and they all have different strategies, and sometimes they take off and sometimes they don't. You know, like, I love those games that are 15, 20 minutes. I think, you know, Munchkin is a great example where it can be different and it's a lot of fun. You put a different genre, is it zombie, Munchkin, or whatever, but it's just a game like that you take 15 minutes to play. Or Flux, I mean, Flux is great when, you know, Firefly Flux came out. It was the greatest thing. Although it's the same exact mechanic, it put the things that I was kind of passionate about onto the board. You know, I unfortunately don't have a group of people because of here that we can sit there and play, where I can have game night. Mm-hmm. It makes it tough, and I love to play the games, but I play Catan with people that play it a bunch, and I'm like, oh, God, I get killed. And I throw the board and I leave. So that's why I end up playing Skyrim or, you know, playing,
yeah,
Warcraft online. So
no, I once played in a Settlers of Catan tournament, never having played the game at all in my life. That didn't go well.
Right.
I'm kind of in the same boat as you, where I don't have that consistent group. So the games that really appeal to me are the ones that have very simple mechanics that you can sit down with a group of, you know, relatively random people, mm-hmm, and right away you can kind of jump right into that game in a way that is really engaging. So I like the Mr. Jack game that I was talking about earlier.
Sure.
Zombie Dice is another, you know, really good favorite, you know, another backpack game for, mm-hmm, me. I really love this game called Anomia, which is a great party game. It's a card game. The cards have different symbols on them, and then each of the cards will have like categories, and the players will flip over the cards, and if you flip over a card and it matches a symbol of another player, like, you know, say my card was U.S. presidents and your card was office equipment. If I name a piece of office equipment before you can name a U.S. president, then I win the card. And so it's just,
that's fantastic,
really
though. That's
simple.
Cool.
You know, you can play them around a game. You know, they don't interfere with the drinking of beer, which is, you know, very important in my experience when gaming.
Yes.
So yeah, you know, I like that stuff. Like Ticket to Ride as well. You know, very simple mechanics to kind of get your foot in the door. But then those games do expand and have a,
sure,
little bit more strategy to them. So that's the kind of stuff that I enjoy playing.
How much of and I don't know how you guys feel about it because we've never talked about this, but like Geek and Sundry with Will Wheaton doing his tabletop thing, how much do you think that's helped or hurt the tabletop gaming community?
I think it's helped immensely. Uh-huh. I mean, there was a while where the game he played recently would be the featured game of the month at Target.
Right.
And Catan was one of the... And I mean, that's a big reason why Target has Betrayal at the House on the Hill.
Sure.
Or Evolution. They would never have had those games probably without... Mm-hmm. Without him. He's actually probably the biggest ambassador for board games there is.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and sometimes I sit there and I think, man, he's going to do Flux, he's going to do this. I'm like, those games are fine, but
right,
he's not getting deep into it. And then he bust out Star Realms. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, never mind. He is getting deep into it. Okay.
Well, I think, you know, some of it is, I mean, he got a sponsorship from Target and they paid him some money, which is good, but they tied it in and saw the value of, was that season 2, right? Or season 3 where he did, I can't remember which season it was. I mean, that was a big move for them. I mean, obviously he wants to get paid doing it what he's doing, and I don't blame him. And but then that was awesome that they were able to do that. And there were some games. What's the game where you build the house? Was that called Avalon? Or so I can't think of the name off the top of my head. And I was intrigued, but then I went to Target and it was like $75. I'm like, I don't have $75 to pay for the game of the week. So
I'm definitely not familiar with that one either. But we're still waiting for our Target deal. So I mean, we're,
sure,
you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, and God bless if we can all get the Target deal. I mean, that's great. So
if Target gives us a deal with me even involved in any way, they're going to go out of business.
They're going to give you a red shirt, unfortunately, and you have to. No,
they're going to give you a red shirt and they're going to throw stuff at me because the games I'm going to recommend, one's going to want.
I mean, God bless. You know, I mean, they early on in the internet, that whole YouTube internet thing, web series. I mean, Felicia Day took her niche and then did Geek and Sundry, and I hate to say took some of her friends along, but Will Wheaton, I'll give him all the props. He saw something that he loved to do. Obviously, he loves to play games, and he turned that passion into a very successful show. That's awesome. I mean, that's kind of like, I think, all of our dreams, where we love to be like, hey, somebody's going to sponsor us now. You know, there's some downside to it. Obviously, you have to do sometimes what your sponsors say, but they gave him a ton of cash to play games and talk to his famous friends, which is great. Have a nice, cool board game, you know, little setup, and, you know, I love it. I think it's great. I watch every episode I can.
All I got to do is get eaten by a shark on Sharknado 6, and I think I'm in.
Well, it's like one of those things that I was talking about earlier where you just look at stuff and you're like, wait, how is that a job?
Right.
You hang out with the coolest people on the internet and play board games, and they just record it,
sure,
and that's what you do.
Well, you know, to address like what you were saying before, I don't think the dynamic of success, the skill set to succeed is different. It's just the outside covering that people are look different. Like before it was, hey, do I wear a tie? Am I the executive, the manager at the bank, becomes the vice president, becomes successful? Now it's, what are the skill sets that make you successful with a different packaging? Because obviously people have tattoos, people have piercings, people, you know, everybody's lifestyle is much more open and different, but it's, you still need to be good at what you do. You still need to be successful. You still need to touch people. You still need to, you know, move people with your passion. It doesn't matter if you're the guy that looks like the biker or the bank executive. It's all the same, you know, it's all the same insides. Whether you're passionate about comic books or board games or owning a Doctor Who deli, I think it's all the same. It's just the trappings are different, which I think is kind of neat that we are able to do that, because I don't know. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I think part of the reason that Tabletop is successful is because people see Will Wheaton sit down with Ed Brubaker and Grant Imahara from Mythbusters.
Yeah.
They're all wearing band T-shirts and they all have piercings, and they see a table they can sit down at it themselves.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to discount, but the Big Bang Theory. I mean, let's face it, with that show blowing up the way it did with, you know, nerds on that and then Will Wheaton being on that.
They were playing
Will Wheaton, you're like, oh, but who's this guy? Because it's Sheldon's.
But it was before that, but it gave it credibility.
It was, but it definitely, I think, boosted.
Oh, sure. Well, it did. Yeah. There's like, I always think there's like four waves of it, like grunge. There was the original like Soundgarden and Nirvana, early Nirvana, that before grunge ever came out, they were grunge. And then there were the other copycat bands. And then there's the third where everybody does it. And then four is when it's on the downside. I think Big Bang Theory is like in that 2 to 3 range where, hey, they were piling on the popularity of nerddom, but and did it help explode it? But now there's tons of people, well, I'm a nerd. Well, you're wearing a T-shirt that we all wore, but are you truly into the games, the TV shows, or do you just say, hey, I played Settlers of Catan once and therefore I am? No. I mean, and not to belittle that, because I think it's all about participation in doing that, but there are, you know, I've been playing D&D since 1978. I played every version. I'm not bragging or saying whatever.
Most of the people here weren't born then, though.
I know, but I'm just saying. But they're, you know, that's in my blood.
You were one?
I was a nerd before then, and I'm not saying that anybody that thinks they are is not a nerd. But you know, there are people who are nerds, and then there's people who play the nerd. And I think we're all nerds up here.
Yeah.
And you know, not excluding anybody, but then there's the people that are like, oh, I saw Will Wheaton once, and it's all good, but it's different too. You know. If your reference to nerddom is Sheldon, that's awesome that you're in the world. But, you know, what about Doctor Who? What about all those bad shows in the 70s that we had to live with? They're great,
shows.
But they're bad. Oh, they're horrible.
Bad
so,
shows.
Awful.
That's I told my that mama story. Was a great show.
How when I was a kid, my dad took me to this science fiction convention. And, I mean, it was like a hallway. It was like smaller than what we have going here. And I made him stay. I mean, it was like 6 hours. My dad's walking around like, oh, my God. There's 4 booths. How can you... and I had to look at everything. And then, and like one guy had a stack of Star Logs. I'm like, oh my gosh. He's like, you have every issue. I had to look through every issue he had on his desk. But they were showing the 70s version of the George Pal. No. Is it the George Pal? No, the 70s version of Time Machine. The one with the triangular time machine. Not the George Pal one. That's the 50s one. I made my dad sit there and watch that. Actually, he did like, after a while, he was like, okay, this is so bad. I think we need to leave.
Is the 70s one the Malcolm McDowell one?
No, that's Time After Time. The Malcolm McDowell one is Time After Time.
That's really
such
good.
A good
that's
one.
That's really
show
good movie,
sucks,
yeah.
But that movie's great. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, to think of like the first Gen Con I went to was in the lobby, not a room, the lobby of a Hyatt in Milwaukee. And now it's like, you know,
yeah,
500,000 people
well,
and you can't even get
I've
in.
I've also told that story. When I was in high school, this is how old we are, I went to Chicago Comic Con. It was two rooms at a hotel. At least that's what the clown told me. No, it was two rooms at a hotel. And there was Larry Martyr, the guy that did Tales from Bean World, was the big guest because he was local and he like had right. two indie comics out. And I stood in line to meet him. I was dying. I still have my signed Tales of Bean World because he was incredible. You like Larry Martyr? Tales of Bean World?
Anyone?
How dare you? It's so good. The Hoi Polloi. It's so good. Are you guys done? Because we got to wrap up and move on to the next
yeah.
person. You'll be back.
Yeah.
We're
yes,
not done with
sorry.
You boys. Mark, are you done?
I'm done.
Excellent. Chris, thank you. Mark, thank you. Why don't you guys all give social media right now? You.
I've been following them forever, but XOrsonX on Twitter, Pure Rock Fury on Twitter, Review and Roast on Twitter, Facebook.com/Review and Roast. Everywhere you can find us, just hashtag it.
Find the Roast and Review, Review and Roast podcasts.
Right.
Comic Roast. ComicRoast.com.
Everything he just said.
And Mark?
And I'm the @ProGeekPodcast on Twitter is my show. And personally, I'm Mark Beers. Yeah.
And come see him live doing Riddle Me
yes,
That.
Yes, come to Riddle Me That. It's fun.
Yes. For fun trivia game fun that isn't me doing it. Teresa, you know about mm-hmm. that. All right. That's it. I kind of like, this was almost like a game, like how long can we keep Mike sitting there and not part of the conversation? That was kind of a game in and of itself. We're going to make him roll to see if he can come up for the next segment.
In Crystal's head, she's crying right now. Like, in
she
the
what?
Worst. Crystal in her head is crying right now in the worst possible way.
Oh, Crystal. Oh, you're playing Candy Crush? Excellent.
Like 30 more minutes.
Have you played Flower Power? Have you played that one? It's by the same people. It's super addicting. It's awful. Awful.
You guys should do a Candy Crush.
I'm on like level 179 right now. My wife's like, what is wrong with you? I got to make the flowers.
All right, so that was us discussing tabletop gaming with the owner of the Blue Box Cafe. His name is Chris. So when you're in Elgin, Illinois, go stop in at the Blue Box Cafe and tell them the Comic Roast sent you because, you know, he'll probably just slap you and throw you out of the store for it. But hey, you know, at least you could say we gave you something. So this next segment is going to be actually all three of us, Mike, Brian, and myself, and we're going to be talking with Rob Southgate again, who is actually, he's really into comics, but apparently he doesn't do a lot of comics on his podcast and stuff, so he's always trying to work with us to come on the show and have us out to do stuff, because he loves to talk about comics, as you will find out very shortly here. So this is going to wrap it up for our special today, and we'd like to thank the Blue Box Cafe for having us. We'd like to thank Southgate Media for inviting us out once again. So this is going to be all about comic books for the next 30-40 minutes. So enjoy, and we will talk to you next week.
This is BattleOnCon 2017. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Blue Box, for hosting this. It's awesome, and thank you boys for being awesome, even though you're not listening. And if you want to support us, there is a box over there for donations. They go to Southgate Media Group. They're not for Blue Box because they're selling you food and coffee. And buy lots of it. It's good.
Really good.
Thank you, everybody that's been out as a guest. You guys are awesome. This will all be on live at the Blue Box as a podcast. It'll be on – the stuff with you guys is going to be on your feed because I'm going to send you the raw.
Correct.
Somewhere.
Hopefully
somewhere.
By Monday.
Hopefully. I'm going to try and
Monday.
Get it to you tomorrow. So –
even better.
Yeah. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to send you raw. Okay?
That's fine.
But I got to edit it down from this because I did it as one file.
Whatever enables us to not have to wear pants tomorrow, that's the goal.
Well, that was too much information. But
very much.
I don't mean no pants at all. I just mean no.
No outdoor pants.
Yeah, no outdoor pants.
No outdoor pants.
When he said no pants at all, I'm like, yeah, this is a family show, Brian. All right. Yeah. I don't want to subscribe to his Instagram. So follow Southgate Media Group at southgatemediagroup.com, where all our podcasts are. Follow us on YouTube. Follow us on Facebook at SMG Pods on Twitter. And that's it for me doing my thing. Say your names. We're going to try it differently. Who are you?
My name is Scott.
Hi, Scott.
And you can find me on the Twittens at XOrsonX.
Excellent. You.
And I'm Mike. I just use the Review and Roast Twitter.
Okay. That's depressing.
Best
Hi,
best
Mike.
Best way to do it.
We're going to roll and see if you get to stay up here in a second. Go ahead.
Brian, my personal Twitter is Pure Rock Fury, and I also do the Comic Roast Twitter. I have the Comic Roast Instagram, and my personal Instagram is kind of long. It's Son of Movie Phone Guy.
Love it.
And the reason is because I don't know if you've ever been to the Barnes & Noble in Oak Brook. The guy that runs the movies and music department has the greatest voice in the history of planet Earth.
Really?
Just go in there and just walk around and just listen. And
does he sound like Movie Phone Guy?
He sounds exactly like him, and I love it. Yes. Yes.
Oh, wow.
And I add news to Teresa. I come loaded with multiple questions just so I could talk to him for like 20
Jacob,
minutes.
Meet your new mommy, Movie Phone Guy. He sounds like butter. Now you made me think of a Lil. Because he's hot buttered. I ruined it. All right. I want to talk to you guys about comics, since you guys do a show about comics. And Brian and I have talked a little bit. I want to follow up on a conversation we had first.
Sure.
I was reading Fight Club 2.
Yes.
And I was saying how much I liked it. And you said how much you didn't like it. I got halfway through it, and guess what? I didn't like it anymore.
I got two books in, and I was like, I just can't do it. I couldn't do it.
I really loved the beginning. I was into it. I was like, I got that it was a little different. I was into it. When it falls off the rails for me, it fell off the rails. I didn't care by the end. I finished it. I went through. I didn't like it. Did you finish it?
I got to about issue 5, and I said, I feel like they're trying to revisit the movie. Or the book, however you want to put
it. Yeah, there were elements of that.
I did keep issue 2 or 3 because I wanted the American Gothic cover because that's the greatest thing ever.
Yes.
So I kept that. I sold the rest, and I don't know what's in that book. I just love the cover so much.
When it goes bad, I don't know how many issues it is because I read it as a trade. But man, when it goes bad, it just starts to suck. And by the end, I was just like, I don't care. I hope everybody burns up in this thing. I hope that this whole story just everybody dies. And I love the movie. The original book is so great.
Yes, it is.
This was not great.
No, it was trying to piggyback off of a lot of...
See you guys.
It was trying to piggyback off being a cult classic and... Ugh.
Yeah.
Which is weird because, you know, Chuck Palahniuk is such a great writer. It sucks that he failed with it.
Well, yeah, and it's weird because he wrote this. He said, I read an interview with him where he was like, this is what I wanted. I envisioned it as a comic. This is the story I've been waiting to tell. This is the perfect medium. So this was like a passion project for him because there's no way he was making Fight Club the movie money off of a comic for Dark Horse.
Right.
Probably hoping that it would get made into a movie off of a comic from Dark Horse, but even with the way it's written, it's not written like a film. That was not going to work as a film. So I don't know what was going on, but boy, I think he lost passion for it too. Maybe he wanted to burn the whole thing up too.
Yeah, probably.
He should have had him leap out like I want to do. Yeah. Like halfway through, it just and it leaps out, and it's all new characters.
Maybe I don't by like the that. Third issue, he's just like, oh God, I don't know what I got myself into, and I got 6 more of these to do.
Did you get to the part with Bob?
Really?
It's so awful. It's only a few panels, and it's so awful. Don't. I tell you, don't read
but
that
But if
book.
You want to, I have the first 2 on sale on Amazon. So feel free to buy them.
So I'm really into like indie comics and that. I mean, I read everything. But I don't know. What are you guys into? What would you say are the books that are out there that you're like, here's what I'm reading, or here's what I think everybody should be reading? Let's start with Mike because he hasn't been able to talk.
Oh, that's all right. I don't want to talk about Fight Club, so.
We're not talking Fight Club.
Oh, okay.
Did you hear my last question, Mike? That's why we kick you off this show.
I was referencing the movie, but nope, nobody got it. Anyways, actually, I read all of the DC Rebirth stuff, with the exception of a few titles that I
okay.
keep. I actually buy every single issue of every single Rebirth book.
So what aren't you buying? What are the two?
No, I'm still buying them. I'm just not reading the all-new Superman and Blue Beetle turned into kind of a mess.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, a little bit. And there's a couple others that I continue to purchase them just because I'm, at this point, I might as well get the sets.
Pretty much a completist at this point.
But that Hal Jordan is actually working out pretty good that Rich brought up earlier.
Yeah.
And all of your staple character books are actually pretty decent with the exception of Batman. All of his titles are pretty horrendous in my opinion.
Are they?
Mostly.
See, I'm not reading any of that stuff. I just occasionally I'll pick up, like, if I've seen Batman's one of the few DC titles I read, but it's
drag. The Batgirl Batwoman series is actually pretty good, and the only one that was holding up is Detective. But they brought in three other Batman titles.
Batgirl, a Burnside title, is great.
Yeah,
that's a great title.
All of the other Bat Family titles, except for the actual Batman comic.
Interesting.
Is horrible. The All-Star Batman, and that's even more money. The big thing with Rebirth was everything was going to be $2.99.
Yeah.
Then they came out with a few books that are $4.99 just to rope you in. So now I'm into that, too, so that's great.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Brian looks like he wants to say something.
Brian wants to talk about Batman because he's a Batman fan.
I am following those are the only books I'm getting. The Tom King Batman, it starts to get good, then it takes a dip, then it gets good again, then it's kind of like up and down.
Interesting.
Almost issue to issue. Detective is steadier, but it's just okay. All-Star Batman is kind of, it's all right.
Yeah.
It had its moments. But
yeah, it's not Scott Snyder's best.
They all have a few moments,
it's
but
so
as
funny
far as
because
consistency, it's rough. And
I just get stuff at the library. I get trades, and it's usually stuff that like I've seen people recommend. Mm. That Batgirl, the one who's got like can't speak, the silent Batgirl. Mm. The first one was amazing, and the Batgirl Burnside was amazing. I'm like, these are great books. The Batman ones I've gotten. Now that you say it, they're probably the older Batman ones though. Like I just read the one where this Court of Owls. I just read that. That was really good.
Yeah.
Especially when at some point when he was having delusions and the book you actually had to turn it upside down.
My friend at work and I have discussed that.
That was pretty sweet.
Numerous times.
Yeah, that was pretty sweet.
Probably like once every 6 months that comes up.
And it was jarring when I was first reading it because I thought, like I mean, it's a trick, but I fell for it.
You know, oddly enough, we went to that panel with Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo last year at C2E2, and they discussed the reason they did all that because they wanted you to be disoriented. Like,
yeah, because he was.
Exactly. So, I mean, it was really cool to hear it from them talk about how they designed it and how they came up with that idea. You didn't sit in on that one.
I didn't.
But Brian and I were there for that one. That was a great panel.
Yeah, that sounds good. That was a great book. But I don't. You know what I was saying before? I'm not as into the superhero books right now. It's got to be something that I know is really good. Like City of Howls, I'd heard was great. I'm like, okay, I'll read this. And it was. Did I go right and get another Batman book? No. I've always been more of an indie comics guy.
Let me ask you that. How do you feel about old X superhero comics?
Like X-Men?
No, like
used
Black
to be
Hammer.
A superhero.
It's a series on Dark Horse, right? By Jeff Lemire.
I don't know that one.
It's 7 or 8 issues in so far, and it is one of the best books that I'm reading right now.
Black Hammer. All right.
Black Hammer. I recommend that.
It's basically a tribute to Silver Age superhero books.
Okay.
Except all these superheroes are all retired and living on a farm in the middle of nowhere.
Is it like on The Tick with the Terror? Remember when he was at the retirement home?
They're all trying to blend into this small town, like they hang out at the diner.
Oh, I like that.
The alien guy like transforms into his thing is he found a church where he really likes some of the people there, so he transforms into like a Mormon or something and hangs out at the church to just kind of socialize.
Everything you said is
and
cool.
And it's got
to
that whole weird kind of like Jeff Lemire vibe where everybody feels like they're missing something in their life, which I love because he's like the master of that. And yeah, and it's still got Black the fun, Hammer. Goofy, like Sentinels knockoff characters and stuff. It's really, really good.
I am a fan. Not, I'm a fan of the like reimagining, like Astro City. I love. Now I haven't read it lately, but I have the first like three trades. Love those. Thought that was really cool. But once again, that's not my go-to. Like I just read Starve. Have you guys read Starve?
Starve was amazing.
I've heard these guys talk about it.
Amazing. Have you read the second graphic yet?
I bought them all as singles, and I read all 10 of them.
Okay, because I read the first graphic, which was probably the first five books. Oh, my gosh. The second one they just got at the library, I'm like, yep, I'm picking that one up.
I think a friend of mine referred to it as the Warriors if it was on the Food Network.
Yes. Yes, that's a great description. And it's so good. And the artwork is so great in it, and the story is just like you're lit up by it. And I feel for this guy. I love it. Love it. And then what else did I just read? I like Black Science. I've been going crazy on Black Science. I love the like anti-hero. Because the main guy on that is like Reed Richards, only they're calling him a jerk. He's awful. He loves his kids. And he's super bright. And he's screwed up. So as you're reading it, you're like, dude, you're screwing it all up, and you're a huge jerk, but I want to follow everything that happens to him. Love it. It is. It's very Reed Richards-y. Love it.
I couldn't get into that one.
You haven't read Black Science, or you couldn't
get
into
it? I read the first trade, and I remember thinking the artwork was fantastic.
It is.
And the idea is fantastic, but just the writing did nothing for me.
I'm so surprised.
I felt like it was a lot of like sentence fragments and words followed by panels of nothing, and I was like, I don't even think I'm reading a book.
That's so funny, because to me it lit me up.
I wanted to go. I thought about going back to it because I really liked the first Deadly Class.
But yeah, Deadly Class was great.
Then I read the second one, and I'm like, I think I'm done with Rick Remender.
Oh, I haven't read the second one yet. So, but I'm not going to take your recommendation now because
yeah, don't listen to me. On
yeah,
that.
I never do.
Yeah.
It works out good for me.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's where we're going with this. I read another one. Did you guys read the one, and I can't think of the name of it. It's a sci-fi book where this girl, her sister, has disappeared from, like, Mars. And she gets on a ship that's going to Mars, or wherever this is. And this ship, it looks literally like a space submarine.
Southern Cross?
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Yes.
I read the first issue of it. And I never got any further with it for some reason.
I don't know if you like the first issue.
Yes,
it is
that
Southern
is Southern Cross,
because
I did read the first issue as well.
The
I
trade,
really like that.
The trade is so good. By the end of the trade, so it's probably six issues, I'm like, oh my God, don't end, don't end. I really am dying to know what happens in that.
That's
great
Becky
book.
Cloonan, correct?
I'm so bad with names.
If it's Becky Cloonan, Damien, the guy who's on our Comic Rose podcast.
Yeah.
He tweets her about how he wants to be best friends with her, which I think is amazing because he did it once while we were recording.
Yeah?
And she responded while we were still recording, which was awesome.
You've got to stay 300 yards away. Did she respond
yeah,
with
right,
that?
Yeah. No, I think he tweeted something about Motorhead or some band, and she's like, oh, my God, I love that album. He's like, oh, my God, I'm best friends with Becky Cloonan.
We're BFFs! Yeah, well, Southern Cross, that is the book. That is an amazing book.
All right, well, now that you mentioned that one, I got one I think that you'll really like if you're not reading it yet. It's called Department H.
I have seen that one. That's I have my list that I'm trying to pick up.
That book is...
It's so good. It's,
think of it that way, except the girl... you ever seen C-Lab?
Yeah.
Okay, think... Okay,
have
laboratory.
I seen C-Lab?
I know, silly question.
Oh, my gosh.
Her father runs the laboratory down there, and he gets... He's dead, so
okay.
He gets murdered. She goes down to investigate, and everything starts falling apart. It's a beautiful mess.
Oh, I'm all about it.
Way under the sea, so you got where are you going to go? You got to figure out who the killer is or if there's a killer.
See, this is what I love. This is what I love about the medium. I love when it goes outside of capes and lunatics. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Even though I do love that stuff, I love these stories, and I love that medium. Like Southern Cross, if I read the book, it's probably a good book, but that graphics in there, I'm like, it just owned me.
Yeah.
You know? Nailbiter, love it. Chew...
She was great. She was great.
I can't get enough of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff lights me up. Nailbiter, you guys didn't react. You guys don't like Nailbiter.
I haven't read it.
I read the first trade, and I was like, I could see this as a movie, and it does what it does well. But
this is
why
I'm not listening to Brain anymore.
Yeah, don't listen to me.
I think I read the first issue.
Did you?
Or do you have issue one?
I have nothing.
thought somebody had it. I saw it trade, and I read that could the be first half of it or something like that, and I thought
it does
right.
What it does really well,
yeah.
But I think I've kind of fallen off the horror thing in the last few years because I feel like I went real heavy on horror movies for a while, and then I was kind of like, I think I'm done with this.
See, I mix it all up, you know? So that's why, to me, I don't get burned out in any one genre. That's why I didn't get burned out on superheroes. I did at one point. I didn't read superhero books for probably 10 years. Not a single one. You know? I just was like, I'm done. Now I mix it up. Now I'm all right.
I still throw one in every now and again.
There's a new generation of them now, though, so it's a little different than what they used
to
be.
Different.
Some people love it. Some people hate it.
Yeah.
Well, as far as superhero goes, one of my favorites is Bombshells. I've been reading that since day one.
I've read that. Is that good?
It is amazing. It
really?
It is so good. If anyone's reading it, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not, you should be. It's a fantastic book.
Once it ends, I'll just grab yours and read them.
Yeah. Well, I'm on like issue 25 already.
All right.
And
powering through, huh?
Oh yeah. Every month. It's.
I'm gonna have to check that one out.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I'm digging. Like, I'm an old school fan. So like the Peter Bagg stuff, I'm all about Hate and 8-Ball from Dan Klaus. Like that's the stuff that I can read that all day. Patience, I mentioned before. Oh, my gosh.
It's on my list.
I need people to read that so I can talk about what happens with it.
All right. I'm going to move that to the top of my list along
with telling you,
a
man,
few others.
As it you might get lost. Well, this is you. So you might be like, I read 4 pages and I didn't like it. But as you go on, I'm telling you.
He's got you down.
It's awesome.
I actually do like Daniel Klaus quite a bit. So I don't think you need to like sell me on the Daniel Klaus quite as much. And
do you know, I told you he was down at Quimby's. I didn't go.
I didn't even know
and
he was
here. And
then
like a month later, he was there officially, and I didn't go. And he's like one of my top guys. Like, you know, all people are like, I got to meet Stan Lee. I would be fanboying all over about meeting Dan Klaus.
You know, maybe he's a jerk. Maybe you don't want to meet him.
No, I heard he's awesome.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Well, I got nothing.
Now, Peter Bagg, this is a crazy one. He friend requested me on Facebook, which I almost passed out. Not
and
that we're friends,
out and hit the
but he
button.
Probably just saw my name coming up in those circles, and I got a friend request. I'm like, oh, my God.
Meanwhile, it was just his intern sitting there.
Yeah, some intern just like, oh, he goes to Comic-Cons. Yep.
And oddly enough, if I'm not mistaken, Damien, the guy on our other podcast, was in a band with him at one point back in high school.
Oh, my God.
So you say Peter Bagg to him, he's like, I hung out with that guy already.
But his
good old Pete.
He's a nice
his
guy.
His books are so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Hate. That series was the best. And it was so vulgar. No kids read it. Okay, Jacob, you're not allowed.
Well, if you want to get away from the hate and you ever want to look into a good love story, per se, you should really check out, I think I mentioned it last time we were here, is Alex and Ada.
Did
Jonathan
you?
Luna and Sarah Vaughn, they did. It's over and done with. It's
okay.
But
Alex
year.
And Ada.
Yes.
Really good.
It's a little bit, you know, in the future, and Alex is, you know, your main character, and he gets a robot for his birthday from his grandmother.
That happens.
And who is Ada, and then it's all about their whole story. I don't want to go too much into
okay.
it. But it was, and that
I'll
was like
out.
You were saying, you know, one of those books you wish somebody would read so you could talk about it. I finally got him and Chris to read it, and they
hate it.
No,
I'll
they
check
loved
it out.
It. Everyone loved it.
I'll for sure check that out.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm super pumped about their new book, Eternal Empire, that just the first issue came out like 2 weeks ago. I really liked it, but Brian really didn't. But
I really
I think
hated
it's,
it.
It's more of a, you know, Alex and Ada was so good. Like, I don't care what they do at this point. It's
yeah.
Just, I'm going to read
so
it.
So good. All right. Here's what we got. We got time to do one quick thing because our new guests are here. And they're leading up to Doctor Who that starts at 8. So we got
perfect.
Time is getting tight. Okay. So here's what I want. I mean, you guys have been on doing all sorts of stuff, but this is comics. So I want you to spit out 3 titles people should be reading, each one of you. 3
do
titles.
Have to be current?
Three titles people should read.
Okay, I'll go. Alex and Ada, Black Hammer, Descender.
Oh.
Right?
Good one.
A little curveball.
Yeah, that's a good one, though. I know that
so
one.
So good.
So you got me on 2. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to go with Touching Evil by Dan Doherty.
Oh, that's a good one.
9 just came out.
Wow. It's my personal favorite right now going
well
on.
Well done, Mike.
And then I'm also going to go with another friend of ours, the Humalian Comics. He's only at issue 5 now, I believe, which is actually a pretty good comic. And then
Wait, what was that one?
Humalian.
Humalian. I don't
Adam
know that
Farster.
One.
Adam Farster.
He's a local guy.
He's a local guy as well. They're two local guys that I actually think are pretty decent.
All right. And he's then, at the cons?
Yeah, oh yeah, you'll
all
see
right,
him.
I'll find
and then
him.
My mainstream pick will be the all-new Wolverine with X-23, which is actually surprisingly much better than you would think.
I'm not surprised. I just read a miniseries of X-23 that was exceptional.
Yeah, she's the new Wolverine, and everyone wants to kill her. So
yeah, the miniseries I read was
pretty good.
Outstanding.
So far,
I was like,
so good.
It's like, I'd read this book.
And they've been across the board with the characters popping in and out from Doctor Strange to Squirrel Girl, so everybody's in it.
Nice.
All right, I will give you my current pick that's issue to issue. That's Shade the Changing Girl from Cecile Castellucci. It's
right.
on the Young Animal imprint on DC. Really weird, really bright colors. It's a strange book. I just really like it. It's kind of a reimagining of Shade the Changing Man from Peter Milligan.
Okay.
I'll pick one book. The book Red Handed, The Fine Art of Strange Crimes by Matt Kent. You guys talked about Department H.
Yeah.
That's his, like, it was like his self-contained story. Just fantastic. Probably
Red-handed.
One of the, yes, it's one of, probably one of the top 10 books I've ever read in the medium.
Wow.
And then we talked about this last week. Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol exceeded my already super high expectations.
You
it's
know
the
what?
The craziest that, thing I've ever read.
It's such a great series, and it's nuts.
It's pure nonsense.
Yeah.
It's barely a superhero book, except once in a while, like, Blue Beetle shows up for, like, a page and a half.
Right.
And then the next thing they're fighting the Scissorman again, and I'm like,
and don't
oh my
you
God,
wonder how that book, like, survived? Because it doesn't fit with the other things that were happening at that time, and it's just, it's brilliant.
That probably is the only reason it survived, because there was nothing like it at the time.
Yeah, nothing.
The Brotherhood of Dada is the greatest creation probably ever.
It's, yeah, high recommendation on
and
that
And I
one.
Saw the panels of when Mr. Nobody runs for president, so his big slogan was Nobody for President.
Yeah.
Which is the greatest thing
it's
ever.
It's the best,
seen.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you guys so much. Give your social media one more time. It may not be for them. It's for
Scott
them
does it the best.
Who haven't heard it.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. You can find me on Instagram at Slevin77. You can find me on Snapchat, also at XOrsonX.
Oh.
You can find our website, nice reviewandroast.com. We have thecomicroast.com. We have Review and Roast at Twitter on Twitter.
And Instagram.
And Instagram. And, like I said earlier, the new one, Star Wars Tabletop Instagram.
Pretty good
one. And then we've got Pure Rock Fury down here. And then Chris, who's not here, is at SkateXEdge on Twitter. And Damien, who's not here, on Twitter at Damien Johnston.
Nice.
You could tell who hosts the podcast, right?
Yeah, you could tell. Yeah, excellent. And these guys, their show's great. You got to check out what they do. And Brian has joined our team inadvertently. He's reviewing on Geeking Out right now. He's writing articles about tabletop, and they ramble, and they're just great.
They yes.
really ramble on.
I said 200 words, 300 words max, and it was like, is that per paragraph? Because, man, but it's great.
And I did send you those
no
links
criticism.
For the Wanted Earth stuff on your Twitter.
Excellent,
I
yeah.
DM'd you all that stuff.
And I think I have a new one, another one to post from you, because I did two so far. I think there's a third. So
I actually have like three more ideas, so I'm going to work
send
on those.
Send them on,
so.
Man. We'll keep posting them. Love them. It's
thanks.
So great.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. It was a lot of fun.